first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. Fam, soccer's back. As you are listening to this right now, the Colorado Rapids are preparing for their home opener this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, taking on the Portland Timbers. It is no longer preseason. It is no longer offseason. The moment you hit the play button on this podcast, it is officially the 2019 Colorado Rapids season. Rabbi Mark Goodman, you hyped, man?
Holding the high line with Rabbi in Red.
It's pretty beachy, the new jingle. What do you think? You love it?
I like it. I guess, bury the lead there, Mark. Listeners, we did a little bit of a soft rebrand for the start of the season. We've been doing some great work with CR45 Design, and then Wanners, who is a Rapids capo, to work on some new podcast art and some intro music. You know, you saw the rebrand from Extra Time Radio earlier this week. This is something that we kind of wanted to do to freshen things up for the new season. So, you know, new season, new us. We've got a new look, I think a better look, and we've got some really fun sound with some really hilarious quotes with absolutely no context, which I think is very befitting of a soccer podcast, particularly a podcast about the Colorado Rapids. But I don't know. Anything else going on, Mark?
We make better sense if you take us completely out of context whatsoever. Like, take any one of our quotes and drop it into any, you know, social situation, and it makes even more sense than if we were using it to predict the Colorado Rapids. Yeah, it's we really appreciate all the help that people have given us in a new graphic. I made the original graphic, and people made a lot of fun of me, but like, I literally did it in Macintosh Preview, which I don't even think is supposed to be used to make graphics. Like, I think if people at Apple knew that it, like, I was using it as like software for creating logos, they would be absolutely humiliated that somebody was trying to make something so stupid out of that. But I just don't have any other, you know, software for that. That's just not how I roll. It's a great sounding thing. I mean, it's definitely like very funky and surf guitar-y for a bunch of, you know, Coloradan mountain types. But hey, man, we're native Californians, and I don't think we're ashamed to say that. But it's great. We're really appreciated. Holding the high line.
Mark, why don't you stick to the punditry, and we'll let Juan do the music, and we'll let CR45 do the art design. With that, Mark, let's get into it. News of the day, or news of the week for the Colorado Rapids that got completely buried in the dead of night that honestly, Mark, I didn't think was actually happening or remotely in the works. Kofi Apare signs on a 2-year deal with the Colorado Rapids, I assume as a budget player, center back, originally joined MLS, drafted by the LA Galaxy, got traded and sent to DC United, where he got some more regular time, was occasionally injured, wasn't always that good, decent in the air when given the opportunity to do so, and is now joining the Rapids on what my guess is at least at best like the fifth center back on the, you know, on the depth chart. Your thoughts on Kofi Apare joining the Rapids and what it means, what we can glean from the timing of it?
I think he's probably more like the sixth center back, but it's kind of like the Rapids had 26 players on their roster, so why not have a 27th? You know, center backs, it's important to make sure that you have some depth there. Court Ford and Axel Schoberg have missed a lot of games in the last couple of years, so I think it was an insurance buy. And I'm sure his price wasn't very high. I guess that he came in at about $100,000 or $120,000. You know, and if you need him and he plays well, then it's great. And if you want a good veteran MLS, you know, locker room presence, he's a good guy for that. So I don't think there's any harm in it. I think there is harm in it if you expect to get 20 games and 1,500 minutes out of him, if that's what the Rapids wind up needing. But, you know, honestly, I'd say of all the positions on the team, the most bewildering for who's going to start is center back. I have seen at least three different possibilities for who's going to be the starting center back pairing for the Rapids. So you just, you know, I mean, maybe Opare gets significant minutes. Maybe they need him. And hopefully he still got some skills there. He's only, I think, 28 years old. He's not.
I was going to say 27, but you might be right.
Yeah, he's not old. He's not broken down. He's just had some injury problems the last couple of years. But he also might just be a guy who you pencil in on the lineup, you know, and, or you pencil in for the reserve team, and that's that. And maybe if you wind up with a lot of extra players, you can loan them out to the Springs and, they get the benefit of veteran leadership.
No, I agree with you, Mark. You know, Opari's option was declined by DC United. And then nobody picked him up in any one of the reentry or waiver drafts or whatever that he was eligible for. And then you didn't really hear any rumblings for it. So, you know, I figured, you know, if the Rapids were offering him to, you know, come on, you know, to come in training with them, I took that as kind of being a trial. But I also thought, especially the Sam Rabin signing with the team, that they were fine at center back. You know, unless they are really, unless Hudson's thinking, you know, this is a buffer in case I have to go back to the three-man back line and I want full two sets of three center backs that I can play in different roles. You know, if you're only playing two starting center backs, and pretty reliably if Tommy Smith is healthy and eligible to play, he's going to be one of those. Why do you need, you know, a six-second choice in that option when I feel like from the other guys that they have, you have all the skill sets as good or better than what you would get from Kofi Opare? But you also didn't really hear any rumblings from him. I don't think his stock was at a level to where he was going to go anywhere significant overseas and play, for example. I also think with where he's at, he probably wasn't willing to take a pay cut to go, you know, be an out-and-out starter, you know, in Podunk somewhere for a USL team or a League One team. But you also didn't hear any rumblings. You know, he was coming off of an injury at the end of last year. So, you know, I thought that, you know, that trial was, you know, it could have been a combination of, hey, we need a body in training, you need to get fit, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch ours. Maybe it could have been them actually trying out. But I mean, for, you know, Stephen Goff rarely gets things wrong over at the Washington Post. And for him to do all the reporting that he did and say, this is absolutely happening, and then Kofi Opare to come out and, you know, openly retweet it and say, nah, this isn't a thing. You know, I have to wonder, you know, did Goff mess things up, or did we kind of have a typical, you know, Rapids, you know, league goes cold and then it suddenly happens with absolutely no fanfare whatsoever? But, you know, I agree that, you know, he's an extra body in training. I think he's a safety valve on a lot of things going on. I would not expect him to be above any combination of Tommy Smith, Courtney Ford, and Axel Schuberg in the pecking order. And, you know, if I'm, you know, me trying to project on Anthony Hudson, I think he might have some ideas for how to work with Danny Wilson to be in there. So, I mean, you know, everybody needs that fourth option center back who's going to work really, really hard defensively to keep the strikers sharp in training and who's going to be a good communicator with the goalkeepers, you know, occasionally take a young player like a Sam Rabin under their wing and then tell them something that they don't want to hear, but something that they need to hear. And so if Kofi Opare is that in the Rapids, then, you know, for a budget player making barely $100,000, you know, he's only on a 2-year deal, you know, I think, you know, potential for decent return in terms of what he can bring to the overall squad, minimal risk in terms of anything. Like, worst case scenario, he gets hurt, in which case then you've just burned a roster spot. But it was a roster spot that I think a month ago the Rapids thought they didn't really need to spend. Shall we move on to it, Mark?
Let's go.
Okay, listeners, we're going to talk some of the bigger picture things as far as our preview for the Rapids overall season. We will be talking about the Portland Timbers to close out the show in the home opener. But so we kind of, you know, we focused on the tree last week when we did our full depth chart in terms of every single individual player, what roles they fit into and why, and where they would fit in tactically with the overall team. And now we're going to take a step back to the overall season as a whole and try to see the forest through the trees. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the Rapids schedule for 2019, Mark. Obviously, there's a home opener against the Portland Timbers, and then pretty consistently throughout the first 2 months of the season, you know, it's a lot of Western Conference teams, and then the Eastern Conference teams that they'll be playing are typically really, really good ones, or ones that are going to be competitive. Namely, they've got a home game on April 13th against DC United, and then I believe their first ever appearance at Mercedes-Benz Stadium will be just 2 weeks later on the 27th. And then it's kind of similar to a couple of years ago, folks, where they have, you know, typically more home games in June through July and into August. Obviously, they'll have the 4th of July game, I guess conveniently against the New England Revolution, since the New England Revolution are, you know, America-themed with the American flag crest and everything. But then, after that, Mark, the last couple of games they have, I believe it's 7 of their final 9 games will be on the road, and most of those are against Western Conference opponents, and most of those Western Conference opponents are teams that made playoffs. Their lone 2 home games that they have in that entire stretch are hosting the LA Galaxy on September 11th, never forget, and then also against FC Dallas the penultimate weekend in MLS. And we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to Ask HDHL, Mark, but you know, it's there's no real easy stretch here other than for me in August, where the Rapids just have a lot of home games in terms of the opponents they're playing. Regular breaks, you obviously have a congested schedule, and as we spoke about last week, there's a couple of positions where I think there's serious concern over who the first backup off the bench is. Your thoughts on the Rapids schedule? Is it somebody to think about, or should we just really, really hope that they're in a playoff spot come the end of August?
Yeah, I would say even earlier than that. If the Rapids aren't, I wrote this in the piece that I'm published in the Denver Post by the end of this week, but I have a bunch of predictions, and one of my predictions is if the team isn't already in a playoff position by the end of August, they're not going to get into one. The month of September is totally brutal for Colorado. The odds that they can climb out of a hole if they're 6 points behind is really bad. So their final 5-6 games of the season are Red Bulls away, Galaxy at home, Toronto away, Sporting away, FC Dallas at home, LAFC away. That's a really rough schedule. You know, that's that's a team that won MLS Cup 2 years ago, the team that won Supporters Shield last year, a team that won the Western Conference last year, a team that always plays tough against the Rapids in FC Dallas, and then both of the LA teams who have massive star power. So I you know, you gotta get them early. That being said, like, I think the team's early schedule is pretty good. I think the odds that the team starts off on the right foot. So Portland, Seattle, Sporting Kansas City, FC Dallas, and Houston are very good. So that's a good thing. And then, I don't know why it is that the Rapids seem to always get an early game against Orlando, but again, they have an early game against Orlando. They haven't played very well against Orlando, and I don't think they have a road win against Orlando.
No, I think it's just, a 1-1 draw at home, and I think the other 3 are losses, including last year at home, and I think both games at Orlando were losses.
Good memory. I remember at least one, I remember both of the bad Orlando road losses. So this is a good year to get a road win. It's Orlando are a bit in chaos. So, that first game against the Sounders next week will be a tough one. Also considering they get to feast on the flesh of FC Cincinnati this week in their opener at home. So the Sounders opening 2 games at home in a row is pretty awesome for them. And that's that. So I think we start off in a decent position, and then we end off in a bad place, and we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. I guess the key thing for me, Mark, I'm going to highlight the month of June into the first month of August. Between June 1st and August 3rd, the Rapids have 10 games scheduled for the regular season, seven of which will be at home. They'll play a home and away against the San Jose Earthquakes in that stretch. Their lone game against expansion side FC Cincinnati will be then. And they'll, of their three road games, they'll be at Portland, at San Jose, and at Vancouver. As I talked about earlier this week on Last Word on Soccer, I'm not expecting Vancouver or San Jose to be very good this year, just with the coaching changes and the turnover and everything. You know, I bet there's going to be a lot of really good playoff caliber teams that go into Avaya Stadium and whoop up on the Quakes. I would say similar things of people going into, not BMO Field, excuse me, what's the BMO Place? No, BC Place, excuse me, to beat up the Vancouver Whitecaps. And I mean, if you're a playoff team, you know, and that's going to be, you know, the newly expanded Providence Park, if you can get a point, that's a point that a lot of other teams aren't playing. So there's a lot of really soft opponents, including a home game against Minnesota United and New England Revolution that they'll get. You know, the Rapids are going to need to pick up 3 points convincingly in a lot of those stretches, and those are some key playoff. You know, I think August 3rd, if the Rapids are in a playoff position in August 3rd for me, Mark, I'm probably feeling really, really good. If they're teetering around July 4th, I'm not feeling good. If they're where they were August 3rd, 2018, as far as the season is concerned, you know, I think we'll be having some really interesting, very repetitive and dreary podcasts come the month of September.
And
one of the big questions for me going into the start of the season, or I'd say the end of last year, that I thought has been made very, very obvious based on the moves that the club has made this year, Mark, is the question of whether or not it's going to be the 4-4-2 diamond or the 3-5-2. Obviously, there's a bunch of preseason games as well where fans have gotten to see that, and I think it's clearly the 4-4-2 diamond. What we've seen in a number of instances in Hudson's case, an approach on either a team level or an individual level or a unit level, have these sort of big, broad plans that take a while to evolve, or have sort of little points where he sort of does a reevaluation and then course corrects throughout that. I think we saw that at a number of times last year with the evolution of Nicky Jackson's role with the club. I think certainly the center back positioning. I think there was a realization of what needed to change as far as the striker core, you know, at some point, you know, last season as well, for Hudson. And so obviously they're trying to be a little bit more attacking. They're trying to be more offensively minded, have a better sense of possession and creating chances and high quality and having that be systematic rather than maybe chaotic or, you know, off the cuff, so to speak. I'm wondering your thoughts on the team's approach to playing possession soccer this year, given the moves that they've made, and how much of that is maybe dependent on the 4-4-2 diamond and the players they have, or if Hudson maybe has something else that he's thinking, you know, I want to institute a pretty significant tactical wrinkle. It just might take until June before I'm ready to debut it.
Boy, isn't that a great question. I think the fun thing is that you, Matt, will get to ask those questions in press conferences and I don't get to be there. And our experience in press conferences is that there's not a lot of people who ask tactical questions. So, Matt, I deputize you queen of tactics for the year to come.
Wouldn't that be king of tactics?
Queen of tactics. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. There's nothing wrong with...
Can I be the Duke of Tactics? The Duke of Tactics sounds more fun.
You could be the Duke of Tactics.
Duke of Tactics!
I don't know. Yeah, well, I was just saying that I'm the King of Tactics. No, that's just kidding. I mean, the default position that everybody's assuming is that the Rapids are going to play 4-4-2 Diamond, and they're going to stay in it, because it's a system that works. An observation that I've been reading more and more, and I always think is an important disclaimer to explain to fans, is that formation is shorthand. It doesn't mean everything. It doesn't determine tactics. Another thing is that if you really want to nerd out, you can talk about what a formation looks like at different phases and in different situation. So, how the team will play 0-0 versus how they play up two goals versus how they play behind a goal, the formation will look very different in those circumstances. Another thing is that defensively, the 4-4-2 diamond doesn't look like a diamond when you're defending. It usually flattens out to a flat 4-4-2. Sometimes it looks more 4-4-1-1. And I've been warned by multiple people who went out to Vegas to see the Rapids play that one of the things that Colorado has been doing, even when they did the 4-4-2 diamond last year, is happening defensively again, which is the central defensive midfielder drops in between the two center backs and creates kind of a sweeper five-man back line. And I think we should expect that again. The other thing we should expect is that if the Rapids want to give a different look, or if things look a little bit flat after a couple games, I would not be surprised to see a return to the 5-3-2. I don't think we're ever going to see the 5-2-2-1 again, because it didn't work at all. But that's just my thought. And I also think that you might see a few other possible formations. The 4-3-3 and the 4-1-4-1 both kind of come out of the 4-4-2 diamond when need be, especially when you want to – if one of the things that we talked about with Coach Hudson last year a number of times was about mid-game adjustments. And one of the things he often talked about was things were either too compact, or things were too spread out, or players weren't using the entirety of the field. They were trying to play through to certain areas, and so they made that adjustment at the half. And one of the ways that that might play itself out is in formation. So the 4-4-2 diamond, every team in the league is going to know that the Rapids are going to keep the ball central, and they're going to try and use their fullbacks to create width, which means that potentially the fullbacks can get isolated, and they can have to resort to pinging long diagonal balls across the other side of the field. And if that becomes a problem, if the Rapids start to lose the ball because everything goes into the left back or the right back and then becomes a long diagonal turnover, they're going to have to create width. They're going to have to stretch the field by getting their diamond players from the midfield to move to the sides. So it's an interesting question of like, how will it play? But yes, you're right. The default position is that they're going to play possession soccer. They're going to play fast passes. Every player is going to get one touch and two touch, and that they want to play the ball forward to a Kai Kamara who's facing backward, so that Benny Fellhaber can pick up the ball facing forward and then pass off the ball to Diego Rubio, who's running forward, right? Like, it's about pass to get to the guy who's going in the right direction with speed towards the goal. You know, like, and if you can do it right, it's a deadly and dangerous scenario. But I think the one challenge that Colorado's going to have is everybody is going to be anticipating how they're going to play. There's not a lot of ways to, I think, to create variety with the 4-4-2 diamond.
No, I agree with you, Mark. It's a very particular formation. And you know, when Matt Doyle used to do his little like 2 to 3 minute tactical chalkboard sessions in the old days of MLSsoccer.com, one of the things that he always emphasized when it came to formations is that there are things that naturally it's really good at, and other areas where it naturally has a weakness. But formations, like you said, are shorthand for tactics. You know, you can be a defensively minded counterattacking team in the 4-4-2 diamond. You can be a total football overwhelm the opponent in a 4-4-2 diamond. You can press in a 4-4-2 diamond. Why is the vanilla flavored ice cream of soccer the flat 4-4-2? Because it's something everybody knows, and it's a very simple formation, and it's simple defensively because it's balanced from a positional standpoint, because it's just two flat manks of four. The 4-3-3 gets you more players into the attack and allows you to press a little bit more, but then also just stresses out your midfield more because there's only three of you. You lose a possession. You don't have a numbers advantage in the midfield, and you generally have to work more because you're a little bit more spread out. What does the 4-4-2 diamond give you? In that middle channel, in the middle part of the field, you immediately have a positional advantage over everybody other than a really, really crushed in 4-5-1 for the most part, as far as normal tactical formations you could go. Like, nobody's coming out in a 0-10-0 with 10 central midfielders, except maybe, you know, Umark with, you know, five Jared Watts's and then five Michael Aziras. So that gives you an advantage. So that gives you an advantage immediately in the midfield, but it gives you inherent weakness on the wings, which puts can put your fullbacks on the island, and it makes you a very central chance in creating team. And you have to have very good positional awareness from those central midfielders to make sure that you're not spacing yourselves out wrong. Otherwise, like you said, Mark, you're going to get torn apart, especially returning over the ball while trying to be a possession attacking team. Now, if you have Kellen Acosta and Jack Price, who are very mobile players who can rotate positionally, and you've got a system set up where you can have total football in that midfield, you can help negate that, but that's still just a functional weakness of that formation. I guess the only other thing I'll add on that, Mark, is, like you said, where the diamond tends to flatten out naturally, not just in a Rapids context, when a 4-4-2 diamond is defending or really, really getting pressed on by the opposing team. In the attack, it's more of a 4-1-3-2, where you could think of Kellen Acosta as a central midfielder, and then maybe Nicolas Mosqueda as a right midfielder, maybe sometimes even a winger, depending on what Diego Rubio is going to do. So in a lot of cases, you know, that allows you to firmly defend with 7 field players, 4 back, and then the 3 most back of the midfield, but then also attack with 5, the 2 forwards, the 2 eights, and then the number 10 as well. So that's something to keep in mind. I'm curious to see whether or not Hudson is willing, if things aren't going well, or if he thinks it'd be situationally beneficial to break out the 3-5-2. My only distinct question, or where I would have cause for pause in that case, Mark, is Keegan Rosenberry's a fullback. He's not a wingback. He'd be a little bit truncated there. And, I mean, unless you're going Dylan Serna and just completely conceding that that left midfielder is going to have to defend a lot with Serna overlapping, I'm not sure that that works. And I'm still not sure, even with the midfield upgrades there, that you have a flat 3-man central midfield and have it be successful in the way that the diamond, I think, has a lot of potential this season for the Rapids. Let's move on to some rapid-fire stuff, Mark. Just really, really quickly, let's say, give me your answer, and then we'll give a 280-character explanation why. So we'll be doing some predictions, folks. We will end the show on answering whether or not we think the Rapids make the playoffs. So I'll start, Mark, with MVP. Who's your Rapids MVP for 2019 going to be?
Ooh, Colorado Rapids MVP for 2019 is going to be Kai Kamara.
Is he just going to score a bunch of goals then?
I thought it was just rapid firing, man.
You can give a little explanation. Okay.
I think he'll have between 12 and 14 goals, and when he's not scoring goals, he'll be creating problems on the holdup or creating room for other players to do things. And I also think he'll be a good locker room presence, although he has not always been. A couple years ago with Columbus, he got into a fight with Gonzalo Higuain, which wound up getting him traded. So, you know, I think his reputation is generally stellar, and that was a hiccup. Your mileage may vary as to the answer to that question. Who's going to be the MVP for you?
I'm going to go with Benny Fellhaber. I think he's going to be the straw that serves the drink offensively. You know, get me, say, 12 assists from him and maybe 5 goals, maybe 1 or 2 really, really good highlight reel set pieces at some point in there, and I think he's going to be the MVP. Let's go with unsung hero for the year, Mark.
Unsung hero is likely going to be Keegan Rosenberry, who is not going to produce that many assists, and he's not going to be that flashy. He's just going to get the job done at right back, and he's going to do it with aplomb, and he's going to do it with speed. It will be great to see if he can bend in crosses, but I'm not aware of that being a huge part of his game. And I don't think the Rapids are looking to cycle the ball through right back for crosses as the main way they get things in. Who's your unsung hero?
Retweet favorite, completely agree with you, Mark. I think he's gonna be, from an individual positional standpoint, he's gonna be the most stable and most reliable defender the Rapids are gonna have, and I think he's just gonna go in there, and he's gonna do his job. he's gonna be a little Mark Burchie, where, he's not gonna make any mistakes, he's not gonna get any yellow cards, you know, there's not gonna be a goal that's completely given up because of a mistake that he does. He's not gonna get forward as often as you might want him to, probably not as much as Declan Wynn or Dylan Serna will at left back, but every single time that he does get forward, something generally positive is going to happen. So, I'll take Mr. Reliable, Keegan Rosenberry, as the unsung hero. Let's go with, I contemplated between doing Rookie of the Year and Young Player of the Year. I think it's an easy runaway favorite in terms of who it's going to be, Mark. You can pick somebody specifically who's going to be a rookie, or go with somebody who's just 22 years or younger. Who's your Young Player of the Year for the Rapids this year?
Young Player of the Year. I'm going to actually, you think it's a runaway, but I'm actually going to go with, although I don't know if he qualifies, I think he's 22. Andre Shinyashiki. I think Shinyashiki is going to have a buttload of goals, and I think that that is going to be very impressive. The other obvious candidate is Cole Bassett. I think Cole Bassett is going to do a lot of great things, but I don't think it's going to show in eye-popping numbers. I think he's going to, you know, have about 800 minutes and probably have about 3 or 4 assists, but it's going to be the kind of thing where people are like, okay. But they're not going to be over the moon. Matt, who do you think is your answer here?
It's Shinyashiki in a runaway for me. You know, I'll go out here and I don't know if we're doing guarantees on holding the high line, if that's a thing. For us. Okay, but I'm gonna guarantee it, folks. I say Andre Shinyashiki will be the 2019 Major League Soccer Rookie of the Year. Woo-hoo! I think he'll get at least 5 goals and play at least 1,000 minutes. And I'm gonna even stretch it even more. I'm gonna say one of those goals is gonna be against Real Salt Lake.
That is, you are really going all out. Somebody needs to remember all these, write these all down, tweet them tomorrow, and then retweet them in 6 months when they turn out to be horribly, horribly wrong. That said, my piece for the Denver Post this week is, 9 predictions for the year. So you guys can totally hang me out to dry and it'll be in writing.
Fantastic, Mark. I guess on that note, give me your biggest bust of the year. Give me a player who's, let's say, player who did not wear a Rapids shirt last year, who you think will just be a tremendous disappointment this season.
Well, he wasn't a Rapids player for half the season last year, but I'm going to say something that's going to make me really unpopular. Kellen Acosta. I think there's a lot of hype around Kellen Acosta because he was with the U.S. men's national team, because he was traded to the Rapids and it was a big trade, and because it seemed like a really good move. I feel like if Oscar Pareja couldn't figure out how to get Kellen Acosta to be productive, nobody can. I would like to see, I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I would like to see Kellen Acosta have a really, really good year. I feel like we've seen everything that Kellen Acosta can do. He's a great dead ball specialist. He is really, really spectacular with a free kick. I just don't know. And I think this formation suits him very well. I just don't know that he's going to shine in it. You know, I think it's entirely possible that Jack Price, Benny Fellhaber, and Nicholas Mosqueda will all have more raw numbers of chances created and assists than Kellen Acosta, which is not what you want when you're looking for a centerpiece, go-to, future of the club kind of player. All right, who's your bust, Matt?
I'm going to say collectively the homegrowns, not because I think any of them are individually going to be terrible or they're going to start and then really cost the Rapids. I just, with all of the hashtag player kids hype around the league, and I think all the hype that particularly came in basically from the Cole Bassett signing, you know, on through Matt Hundley and Sam Rabin, you know, I think Sam Rabin's probably a snorter with the switchbacks and maybe playing an Open Cup game or a random Wednesday night game where the Rapids have like 3 games in 8 days with like multiple plane flights being involved. And in that, I think Rapids fans are going to be a little bit disappointed. And I think while he burst onto the scene and had some really good moments for last year, I think a lot of what's going to happen that's going to be beneficial for Cole Bassett is going to be in training and working with the older players and not necessarily something that we're going to see on the field. I just because we haven't really seen it, I'm not sure I believe in the consistency of of Dylan Cerna starting and playing well for long stretches at any position in the 4-4-2 diamond, let alone left back where we've seen him during the preseason. And I think Matt Hundley, like Sam Ravin, will kind of be bouncing back. Well, maybe more in training with the Rapids, but I think he's going to spend a lot of time, you know, with the switchbacks, you know, whereas I think, you know, maybe if, you know, the Rapids lose 3 or 4 games, then it's going to be, we'll play the homegrowns, or as soon as the Rapids are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, it's going to be play your kids, so to speak. And I don't think that fans or the pundits or the people viewing from afar are going to be satisfied with that, because they're not going to see the progress that's been made, because it's going to be outside of actual gameplay. And I think in that, fans are going to be disappointed. I still think Sam Bradman's going to make a lot of progress as a pro. Matt Hundley's young and he needs mentorship and he needs learning experiences. I would say the same thing with Cole Bassett. They're not going to be bust, but I think everybody's just hyping up and praising the homegrown so much that because we're not going to have Sam Ravin off the bench at center back and then Cole Bassett starting at number 8, people are going to be disappointed. And in that is going to be underwhelming for Rapids fans in 2019. And then lastly, Mark, I think this is a pretty easy formality for both of us, but who do you have winning the Rapids Golden Boot in 2019?
Golden Boot's Kai Kamara.
Okay, I agree with you. You know, unless, someone is going to have to, in the forward core, is going to have a meteoric rise, or if Kai Kamara isn't, it's going to be after either one. It's either that, or the Rapids are absolutely terrible for me this year. You know, if it wasn't going to be Stefan Eigner or Yannick Bolli scoring a whole bunch of goals last season, knowing that Don Baggi wasn't going to finish out the year with the club, either somebody else had to be absolutely on point from a striker standpoint, or the team is really, really bad. You know, if Nicky Jackson's balling out right now, and Andre Shinichiki are playing well, and Diego Rubio are playing well, and Kai Kamara gets hurt, I could see Kai Kamara not winning Golden Boot and not being a regular starter for 34 games with the entire team. But if it's any scenario other than something like that, the offense is going to take a massive hit. We're not going to get the goal production that is needed for this team to make the playoffs, and then ultimately they're not going to be a playoff team. It's time for our plug-in for the Denver Post. Mark, do you want to do it this week?
Holding the Highline fans, you guys can get a special deal on a subscription to the Denver Post. Just go and check us out on Twitter for all the information. I think, Matt, the extension that a person has to fill out is to sign in to denverpost.com/HTHL.
Yes.
And get an opportunity to subscribe. The normal rate is 99 cents for the first month and $12 a month after that. The HTHL rate is 3 months at 99 cents. So it's a really good deal. You get all the content of the Denver Post, the sports section, the local news. They have the Cannabist. It's the world's only marijuana review and news site based in a major local newspaper. You get all the breaking national news, great coverage of the Broncos, the Rockies, those other teams that are owned by KFC. You know, humbly said, you get a couple articles on the Colorado Rapids written by yours truly, Mark Goodman, every month. So go ahead and sign up. We'd be really privileged to have you. And also, Matt, as you know very well, you can go there every week and find Holding the High Line right there posted up on the Denver Post webpage. We are semi-unofficially the only Colorado Rapids podcast for the Denver Post. Yeah. Did I do okay job, Matt? Was that kind of cool?
No, that was a really good job, Mark. So listeners, before we hit recording, I put out a tweet at Rapids 96 podcast, with our new podcast art, and then obviously put it up on our Twitter. By the time you're looking at this, the podcast art that we have set up for Blueberry iTunes, Google Play, will also have our new stuff. And I think, you know, you've made it, Mark, when you put something out and then immediately everybody's trolling you. And now, people are tweeting at us saying that, they're leaking our next, logo rebrand, and Adidas is doing it. And it's basically just like blank white pages, that I think is absolutely hilarious.
Oh, we should have gone white. That would have been so hilarious. Or
that would have been such a heel move.
Pink and black would have been good too. Did you see that new kit from Seattle, their second kit? It looks like the one that I bought you.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that one. That one was good. And then actually, Pablo Maurer over at The Athletic got his hands on a couple of rejected new secondary kit designs for DC United that if you are a subscriber to The Athletic, I think is also really, really good MLS jersey release fodder that's worth checking out. But in any case, Mark, it's time for us to go to Ask HTHL. We have two of them this week. Okay, our first one this week, Mark, comes from James Lukakovic, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. James asks, what is up with the 2-9 home games to finish out the regular season? I assume that's two home games out of nine. Too many Fish concerts, that's P-H-I-S-H, they're a band for those of you who don't actually listen to really good music. Why even have your own stadium? This seems exceptionally unbalanced even by MLS standards and is worthy of some official explanation from either MLS or the FO. Mark, I'll throw it to you. What is with the unbalanced scheduling for the Rapids and the general unbalanced scheduling and long stretches of home games and road games that we see throughout MLS every single year?
So you're talking about the four games that they're off in the month of August? Is that where the big gap is that he's talking about?
James is asking specifically about finishing out the season with all the road games. But I think, you know, we could throw that in there as well, because I think that's part of the general topic.
There's not so many. I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. This is not an area that I'm really good at. I mean, it's really, you know, composing a schedule is exceedingly complicated. The fact that there's an even number of teams in the Western and Eastern Conference this year actually makes the schedule a little bit better than it used to be. But, I mean, I feel like the schedule is pretty much going to be better this year than it has been in past years because there are fewer teams in the league that you need to work around. So like last year, especially in the Eastern Conference, everybody knew that DC United started the year on like a 13 game, road trip. And then they had to finish the season with like a 14 game homestand or something ridiculous like that. Minnesota has a wonky schedule or had a wonky schedule because of, their stadium situation. So did Atlanta last year. So did LAFC, who didn't start at home either. The Rapids and the rest of the league don't really have a situation like that. Everybody's playing at their regular stadium for the entire year this year. So I personally don't think the schedule's that wonky. There are a couple exceptions. The obvious exceptions are international dates. Sometimes the MLS will take off for an international window. Sometimes they won't. And then if you go on Twitter, you'll see people flipping out because the league isn't taking a break over an international. They may have a reduced schedule where they only play three or four games, but it becomes unpopular. The only other this year, actually, the schedule is a little bit better than it normally is because, the playoff schedule is different than it used to be. If you haven't been paying attention, the playoff format changed for Major League Soccer. They went from six teams in each league going to the playoffs to seven, and they went from the first games being knockouts and then the next two legs being the next two rounds of the playoffs being two-leg home and away, or home and home as they're called, series. Now it's a straight knockout tournament all the way through. With that first game between the seven and the six being a so-called play-in game. So, the six, the five, the four, the three, and the two play each other. And the one.
And then it's a four-team bracket, one-game knockout, higher seed hosts.
And the one gets a bye in each conference. So anyways, point being, the schedule is a little bit different this year, and it also means that MLS Cup will be almost a whole month earlier and the offseason will be a whole month longer than it used to be. So that's my kind of riff on the schedule. I'm not sure if that answered this person's question, Matt. Do you think I answered the question, or do you think there's a better way of explaining why he thinks the schedule's not up to par?
I think there's a better way to explain it, Mark. Pretty consistently throughout the entire league, teams that live in cities that have winter, have snow, start off on the road. The Chicago Fire regularly start off on the road in MLS play. Houston Dynamo pretty regularly have a home game to, you know, have 2 to 3 home games to close out the regular season and then start off at home. LA Galaxy usually have a home game. You know, Minnesota's usually on the road. Montreal normally starts out with a couple game road trip, and when they don't, it's when they're playing in the semi-dome stadium, the Olympic Stadium, rather than out, you know, in the elements at Stade Saputo. I think MLS is very understanding that weather has a massive impact on their overall attendance. For those of you who've been watching CCL this week, you had Toronto playing in negative degrees Celsius, and BMO Field wasn't very well attended, albeit, you know, they had a pretty bad, you know, aggregate score to go up against. So maybe fans just weren't interested in the game at all. You know, there might have been 10,000 people at the absolute most at Red Bull Arena tonight as we're recording for their CCL game. When it's a cold, when it is cold temperatures, fans don't show up those games. You know, you saw, you know, credit to every single one, every single person, you and me included, Mark, who was at the Big Chill at DSG Park. But tell me that if they play that game against Toronto FC on a set, you know, if we magically are able to move CCL to start in the middle of the summer and have that be a 7 p.m. kickoff in on a Saturday in June, that that's not better attendance than, you know, a Wednesday night in February. So there's pretty good data for that. So in that, you have the more southern teams, the more western teams, the ones in the lower third of the United States that don't have snow, that don't have inclement weather, that won't see freezing temperatures. If you have a home game in March or a home game in September, are typically going to get their schedule a little bit more spread out, and you're going to see a little bit more congestion with a lot more of the home games during the good months for a lot of those teams. And Colorado has a lot of sunshine in the summer, so that's really beneficial for us. It's beneficial for Montreal, everybody north of the border. I throw in Minnesota United, Columbus Crew into that conversation as well. So in that sense, I guess that it makes sense. I guess to get to the part of James's question about who's actually organizing this, my understanding, and I'd say that this is true for pretty much every single league in the United States, is that the league pretty much makes the schedule and they try to accommodate every single team as much as they can, and the also the venue. Now, it's easier for a lot of these MLS teams and obviously the Rapids because they own you know, they own their stadium. But you know, you look at a place like Madison Square Garden, for example, that has a hockey team and a basketball team, or some of the other venues, you know, that have two sport teams playing in the same venue can be extremely complicated. You know, the Rockies don't have to worry about having a roommate or another tenant at Coors Field, for example, whereas, you know, if you're looking at if the Avs are looking at scheduling, you've got to account for concerts that are planned out with tour dates almost a year in advance, potentially. You've got to accommodate the Denver Nuggets schedule, and then you've got to accommodate a few other things for the actual changing of the venue. And there's complexities associated with that, with teams making particular requests. I remember a Rapids official, I think we were talking, this was a casual conversation, so I won't use their name, but you know, they said pretty regularly, you know, if the league asks us, you know, about individual dates that we want for home games, if it's a Saturday, we want it to be 7 p.m. as often as possible. If the Rapids had their way, Mark, if it wasn't a Sunday matinee that's on national television, they would have every single regular season home game be a Saturday 7 p.m. kickoff. And you see pretty regularly, you know, I'd say 15 of the 17 Rapids home games last year were 7 o'clock Saturday kickoffs. So some of those, some of this wonkiness is associated with the complexities of the venues. Obviously, Portland Timbers are going to have a really, really long stretch of road games to open up the season as Providence Park is getting renovated. Some of it is the league understanding the metrics associated with teams playing at certain times of the year based on weather patterns. And some of it is based on personal preferences as far as the teams are concerned. Last year, you had a couple of FIFA window dates that MLS chose to have games be available, and teams actually had an option to say whether or not they wanted to play on FIFA dates. And obviously, if you're a team that doesn't have a lot of international players that are getting called up, maybe you want to play that week because, you know, it'll spread out your schedule, and maybe you'll get lucky and play a team that has a bunch of players called up. And obviously, if you're, you know, an international team or a team that has a lot of internationals that are getting called up to their national team, you know, maybe you're a New York Red Bull or a New York City FC, for example, or, you know, I think of, you know, all of the Americans on Sporting Kansas City back in the day, the Matt Beasers, the Graham Zeuses. You don't want to play on that. So I think there's a number of variables going into this, James. I don't know that we can necessarily blame the Rapids specifically for saying, hey, we want all of our home games in August, you know, in August, in July, in June. You know, maybe this is an aberration in terms of seven of the final nine regular season games being on the road. But, you know, I think there was a really, really good quote from David Ostead when I interviewed him after a game that they lost to the Rapids a couple of years ago. And I think they had had, they'd spent 16 days on the road between regular season. They had a regular season road game, went to a Canadian championship game, had another road game, and then I think a CCL group stage game. Then they were playing the Rapids and then going back for a home game. And, you know, he said, you know, we can sit here and complain about this all we want, but at the end of the day, if you ask every single team in MLS who has the hardest schedule in MLS, you know, it's going to be, you know, at the time, I think there were 22 teams in MLS. You know, he said all 22 teams are going to say that. So everybody says their schedule is the hardest. Everybody says they have, you know, the worst combination of three games in 8 days during that Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday game week that they'll inevitably have at some point in the season. You just have to deal with it. You know, James, I guess the thing you should be hoping for the Rapids at this point is take care of business between June 1st and August 3rd so that you can afford to get a couple of draws and a couple of close losses during those final seven away games of season. Let's move on to our other Ask HTHL this week, Mark. We have a question from Jody Robbins. Jody asks, we talked about this the last couple of weeks, but she wants a prediction, so we'll add that in, Mark. Who starts at left back on Saturday for the Rapids, and who gets the most minutes at left back this season, and who is playing left back at season's end? Mark, handicap the left back position for the Rapids in 2019.
All right. Setting aside injury, which is completely unpredictable, the player who begins the season will be Dylan Serna. The player with the most minutes on the season at left back will be Dylan Serna. The player who ends the season will be Sam Vines. And I think that's because Serna has pretty much been penciled in there every game, including the last game, which was pretty much the closest indication to what the front office and the coaching staff thinks they need to go into the beginning of the season with. But in addition to that, you know, at the end of the season, you want younger players to get opportunities, especially if the games don't mean anything. Sam Vines is definitely going to get some chances. It may take place in the middle of the season. If the Rapids are in the playoff picture, he'll get limited minutes unless he's proven to be the best left back on the team halfway into the season, which would be impressive. And if the Rapids are looking like they're going to be out of the playoffs, Sam Vines is going to be starting at left back for the entirety of the last month of the season. What do you think, Matt?
I think the player who starts on Saturday for the Rapids at left back will be Dylan Serna, based on what we've seen in preseason. I think the collective minutes that you'll see across all competition, the player with the most minutes at left back will ultimately be to win. I still think Anthony Hudson just thinks he can get something out of him, having rapport from the New Zealand national team that nobody else thinks that is in Declan Wynn, or that he thinks is more valuable than trying out Dylan Serna with a few tactical wrinkles and really good skill sets at that position. And I'll admit I was reading Jody's question as a request for who's starting the first game and then who's starting the last game. So I will say that by decision day, October 6, 2019, the Colorado Rapids have a 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time kickoff at LAFC for that one. I say at that point the Rapids know whether or not they're in the playoffs. So either they're not in the playoffs and it's who cares, let's experiment with the roster and it's going to be Sam Vines, or it's let's rest one of Dylan Serna or Declan Wynn, who's ever going to be starting at left back in the playoffs. So I'd say that will be Sam Vines. I think if it is a playoff game, if the Rapids do make the playoffs, who's starting at left back, I think will be dependent immediately on form, but I think more so could be dependent on tactics and individual matchups. You know, you don't have two-leg series at this point. It's a one-off win. One-off winning you advance, losing you're out situation. So I think if the Rapids are trying to play a little bit more defensive and try and protect that back line, I think Declan Wynn will get the start, and I think if the Rapids are trying to attack a little bit more or they see some weakness at their left, the opponent's right side, particularly the opponent's right back, then I think Declan Wynn starts. But I think that will be very much situational, more so than than something on a long scale of form of several months that we've talked about in trying to compare Declan Wynn at left back vis-a-vis
Dylan Stein. That does it for Ask HCHL.
Mark, it is time for us to preview the Colorado Rapids opening game of the 2019 season. As I've said a million times by now, this coming Saturday, March 2nd at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids will be hosting the Portland Timbers, 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. This will be on Altitude, on the various Altitude sports channels. For those who do not in the Colorado Front Range, I believe this game will be available, like all MLS games, on ESPN Plus. Mark, your thoughts on this game going into it? Portland Timbers, won the Western Conference playoff series against Sporting Kansas City. Disappointing performance in MLS Cup against Atlanta United, but the gang's all back on offense. It is Diego Valeria, it is Sebastian Blanco, it is Jeremy Ibobasi, probably Andy Polo. Diego Chara is one of your favorite number sixes, and the defense has a lot of new faces and a lot of question marks. Your thoughts on the Portland Timbers as a team going into 2019, and how they'll play against the Rapids on Saturday?
It's hard to bet against Gio Sanavarese. He's been an excellent coach in his first year with Portland. But it's easy to be skeptical about this team. They brought in Claude Dielna to fill a hole that Liam Ridgewell occupied at center back. Ridgewell wasn't super mobile and had a really bad beginning of last season. He caught on eventually, but Dielna wasn't healthy and or wasn't good for the Revs last year. He was also the most expensive center back in Major League Soccer last year. That's a really weird thing. I think they're betting that a year of adjustment and a healthy year and Dielna will be worth what you get. I would also assume that Portland got a deal, considering that New England probably just wanted to recoup any money they had. It's really difficult to bet against Diego Valeri and Diego Chara, who are both excellent. Sebastian Blanco is maybe one of the best wing players in Major League Soccer. He's just going to dribble at you and humiliate you. If you put a ball over the top, he'll feather it onto his foot, in stride, pretty much about as well as almost any player in soccer. On the other side of the field, Andy Polo will occupy you, but not actually accomplish anything. Everyone's waiting for Jeremy Ibobasi to break out and do something really spectacular. I think he's a good, solid striker, but he's good for maybe 8 to 10 goals. He's not going to win the golden boot for the league. And I think a lot of this is going to be around Savarese, changing the lineup from week to week. Last year, they played in the Christmas tree for most of the year. By the end of the season, they switched it up and they went to either a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2. They played 4-2-3-1 also. There are definitely questions here. Larrys Mabiala is not a great center back. Julio Cascante is decent. Jorge Villafaña, who they sent away and then they reacquired, is a wonderful left back. And after that, there's a lot of questions here. So I don't think they have the gas to be the best team, to be a top team in the league. I think that this is a year in which Portland misses the playoffs likely. Because they just don't quite have the pieces, but, you know, to finish where I started, betting against, Savarese is not a great move. I mean, he got a lot out of his team last year. He's a very clever manager, and this is the other team besides the Colorado Rapids that are that sneak into the back end playoffs type team. Matt, what do you think about the Portland Timbers and how they match up against the Colorado Rapids coming into this game?
Well, I think as we talked about with the Timbers getting, you know, the upgrade and the renovation of their stadium, I think they're approaching this game, the season as a whole, really in two chunks. They'll open up with 12 road games to start off the season. They won't be back at Providence Park until June the 1st, taking on LAFC. So, I think this team is still really built to be best on the counter attack. You know, it's, they confront you in in the midfield with numbers. Diego Chara, you know, is standing there, with lumberjack axe and chainsaw in hand, and you're not capable of getting past him. He makes a really good sliding tackle or a really good move to get the ball away from you. Two ping passes go after that, and then Diego Valeri's got it running at goal, usually with a numbers advantage. And like you said, I think for my money, Diego Valeri is one of the best number 10s in MLS history. And as far as like having a wingman, who isn't Miguel Almiron to Joseph Martinez. You know, Sebastian Blanco is a pretty fantastic Robin to have to Diego Valeri's Batman. So I think this game, and then in particularly the first 12 games that the Timbers have, I think they're tailor-made for Savarese to say, you know, we're going to come in, we're going to be stout defensively, we're going to try and protect our back line, we're going to put the team on the back of Diego Chara as we have for 3 to 4 years now and still had extremely good success with it, and then we're going to counterattack, and we're going to get, you know, 10 to 15 really, really good opportunities where the ball turns over in the right place and Diego Valeri's right there or Sebastian Blanco's right there and they're able to get an outlet pass that gets the ball to somebody in space with speed against the individual mark that we really, really like from a positional standpoint. And then, you know, we're going to convert 2 to 3 to those and then we're going to be okay. So, you know, I think Valeri's obviously the king on this point. I'm looking at how he is marked and how he is matched up against Jack Price in this case, especially with the way the Rapids playing, the way I expect the Timbers to come out, being on the road for 12 games to start the season and in the first game of the season, especially playing at altitude with some inclement weather that a lot of their players, particularly the Central and South Americans, won't be accustomed to. You know, I think they're going to try and defend. I think it's about Jack Price and how he's marking Diego Valeri. Sebastian Blanco will roam a little bit more from touchline to touchline. I expect him to maybe rotate with probably Andy Polo, maybe the loney from River Plate, whose name escapes me right now. So my question is, you know, is Keegan Rosenberry alert to that, to know where Sebastian Blanco is and where he's floating and where he has to cover that particular gap or the number eights in the event that the Rapids are getting a little bit more compact? So, you know, I don't like this back line for the Timbers. I think if they are going to make the playoffs and make another run in MLS Cup this year, it's going to be winning games 2-1, 3-2. I don't think that they're built to win games 1-0, but I also think that they're built to score a whole bunch of goals. You know, as much as I don't like this, this Timbers backline, I also don't like backlines that are generally in flux. The best defensive teams in MLS are typically the ones that have really good talent, but then also don't have a whole lot of turnover. Why is Sporting Kansas City, over the last 3 to 4 years, one of the best defensive teams in MLS history? Because they've had the same goalkeeper, the same captain center back, the same right back, one or two left backs, and it's either been Aiko Parra, Aurelien Collin, or Gilbert Puentes, I believe, you know, all of whom have been fantastic in their time in MLS. So I just think even if the Timbers backline figures it out late in the season, I don't like them in their first competitive game together where they probably have two changes. They're playing in cold weather and they're playing at altitude. They're going to try and protect their backline. Can the Rapids break them down? Can Kai Kamara get an opportunity to alley-oop dunk on Laris Mabiala on a set piece? Can, when the Rapids maybe turn the ball over or have numbers trying to overwhelm the Timbers and Chara makes a really, really good play and that ball falls to Diego Valeri, can the Rapids snuff out those 1 to 2 really good golden chances that the Timbers are apt to create? Can Jack Price, can Tommy Smith, can maybe Nicholas Mesquita, can they put out that fire before it actually spreads and then, you know, it's Tommy Smith or Danny Wilson or Dylan Cerna 1v1 marking Sebastian Blanco? None of those matchups of which I like from the Rapids standpoint.
Yep. Well said.
Okay. I guess, Mark, do we want to throw out a prediction for this game?
I think the Rapids win this one 3-2. You're going to hear me suggest the Rapids winning a lot of 3-2 games this year. Unless maybe in the middle of the season things radically change, but yeah, you nailed it. These two back lines, you said you were talking about the Portland back line being questionable. And you were also talking about whether Keegan Rosenberry is ready to stop Diego Valeri. I don't know whether either of these back lines is ready to stop anything. So I think it could be a shootout. The only mitigating circumstance to that is how hard the snow falls. A very snowy game makes it harder to move the ball up and down the field with pace. So that might bring it to a 2-1 game instead. But, you know, 3-2, what the hell? What do you think, Matt?
I'm going to go with 2-1 to the Colorado Rapids in this one. You know, I think you're not going to have a better opportunity to beat the Western Conference champions than you are in this opportunity, you know, pending any unforeseen last minute injuries. You know, I think I think the weather is going to have an impact. It's not going to be a bunch of pretty goals. It's not going to be a goal that's preceded by 10 to 12 really good passes in the final third. You know, it's going to be collectively, methodically moving forward, maybe losing possession and then a back pass or a turnover or a lucky bounce creates something, and then it's 2 to 3 passes at most to open something up given the weather and then how things are going to get spaced out. Nicholas Mesquita will be very familiar with the Portland Timbers, having played formerly with the Vancouver Whitecaps up in Cascadia. I think he'll get his first goal, and let's just make it a Whitecaps thing, and then I think it's going to be Kai Kamara on a set piece probably from Kellen Acosta dunking on, you know, take your pick between the three center backs, all of whom I have questions with as far as the Portland Timbers, and I'll say it'll be a counterattack. You know, Jeremy Ivobasi, got a goal against the Colorado Rapids. I think he'll be killing himself. He'll probably have a tap in where, you know, maybe Blanco finds Valeri or the other way around. And then all Ivobasi has to do is stand in the open space in the completely open goal and then not completely whiff on the ball, you know, a la a Giassi Zardes first touch. That does it for our Timbers preview, Mark. As I referenced earlier, I think, you know, in the interest of us making predictions where people can then troll us on the internet when we're wrong afterwards, I think it's time to predict how the Rapids season will go. Mark, yes or no, do the Rapids make the playoffs, and what will their final seeding in the Western Conference be?
No, the Rapids finish in eighth. They missed the playoffs because they left too much on the doorstep going into the month of September, and they encounter a couple of injuries through the year. They struggle with depth. The defensive core doesn't really shape up as much as they had hoped to. They concede too many goals. They score a lot of goals, but they don't score enough. Their goal differential at the end of the year is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of -5 to -10, and it's not going to get them into the playoffs. Matt, what do you think? End of the year, playoffs or no, what position are they in?
No playoffs, and I have them also. I also have them finishing eighth. Sorry, Mark. I also have them finishing eighth. I think you brought up some really good points over the narrative of the team and how they're going to play and what's going to go well and what's going to go poorly. I just, you know, as much as I like what they've done offensively, as much as I like the direction the club is going in, I just don't know that relying on a 34-year-old former number 10 with an MLS Cup winner and your main number 9 also being 34 years old, that you can count on them being healthy, both of them being healthy for more than 25 games individually, and I think that's going to be just enough for them to miss out, probably competing with Minnesota United for that last spot as well, you know, who I think are going to have a tremendous amount of momentum this year as they open up Allianz Field. If you guys haven't checked out the renderings of that, go Google it. It's going to be absolutely fantastic, and I think it's going to be an absolute fortress for the Loons. So I think, you know, that little bit, although I also have questions about the new acquisitions Minnesota made, you know, in Aiko Parra and Ozzie Alonso, who I don't think will be fully healthy this year. I think with the new stadium and all the pressure on Adrian Heath, I just think that's going to be just enough for Minnesota United to get 1 to 2 points more than the Colorado Rapids. That said, I think we're going to look back at the 2019 season and feel good about the progress that was made. I think we're going to feel really good about some of the individual role players who the club has brought in to fill holes that existed in 2018. I think we're going to like the future of the forward core and certainly what the midfield is doing. Like I said previously, I think there's going to be progress made for a lot of the homegrown players, even if we don't see it on the TV and at Dick's Sporting Goods Park during actual games. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, this is a bridge year. I think, you know, Benny Fellhaber and Kai Kamara coming on with the club, those were bridge contracts to get them over the hump. Right now, you know, the clock's gonna strike midnight on, you know, on December 31st, 2019, and Skelton Gashi and Tim Howard are going to be off the books for the Colorado Rapids, and the Rapids are going to have 2 open DP slots, in theory some money to spend, and promises about bringing in a number 9 and a number 10. And if you talk about bringing in a guy at their rough salaries, anywhere between $1.5 million to potentially $2.5 million, you know, that's an Albert Rusnak for you. That's a Fernando Adi of 2 to 3 years ago. And if the Rapids get those guys when they were actually or their equivalent to them in terms of production in MLS, you know, say a 12 to 15 goal scorer is the number 9 DP, and then, you know, a 10 assist, 5 goals number 10, you know, that's a team that's going to be a playoff team in 2020. But for now, the pieces aren't really there just because of the coincidence and the circumstance of the contracts that they have on the book and the term on those. I think they've done a tremendous job making progress in the areas that they could and putting a team that's going to be much more competitive than last year, but it's not going to be enough, but they're setting themselves up to be in really good position, and it's all guns blazing at this point, because if the Rapids can't make the playoffs in 2020, you know, 3 years straight under Anthony Hudson, I think serious questions have to be asked by someone with the last name Kroenke about the direction the club is going in and the people that those the Kroenkes put in charge to run the Colorado Rapids. With that, listeners, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for putting up with the preseason and the offseason as it was. You can follow us individually on Twitter, @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our Rapids print material at the Denver Post and at Last Word on Soccer. Thank you again to CR54 Design for putting out all of our new podcast art that we have on Twitter, that we have on iTunes, Blueberry, Google Play, etc. Thank you to Wanners for putting out our new intro and outro music. Absolutely fantastic. Wanners does have a new single dropping on March 4th, the Monday after the home opener. So feel free to go check that out on a SoundCloud. Links in the show description and the show notes. We'll also probably tweet it out as well. You can subscribe to Holding the High Line wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Holding the High Line or Rapids 96 Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @Rapids96Podcast. Email us @Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Use the hashtag AskHTHL if you want us to answer your questions on the show. With that, thank you very much for joining us. Oh, one more thing, Mark. We will be having, you will not be there, but I am getting together with a couple of the other members of the Rapids Press Corps on Saturday after the game. We'll be meeting at the Bulldog at 8 p.m. just in time for the late night Western Conference games to kick off. I believe the FS1 game is Chicago Fire taking on the LA Galaxy. So if you want to see Zlatan score a billion goals against the Chicago Dumpster Fire, check us out there. We'll be there at 8 p.m. I will be there. Abby Wood of the Burgundy Wave will be there. Joseph Samuelson will be there. We've got a couple other people who are tentatives, probably going to RSVP by the time the show comes out. So we're going to get a beer afterwards, since, you know, it's a relatively early game and we'll all be back at our houses at a reasonable hour. So, you know, what other thing do we have to do on a Saturday, Mark, besides go to a bar, drink beer, and watch soccer, right?
Sounds like an ideal life. You should do that.
Okay, very good stuff. Listeners, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Enjoy the home opener on Saturday. I'll see you there.
Peace!